Chapter 108. German encounters an old shipmate. During the morning of the day which dawned upon the events just recounted, we remained a little to leeward of the harbor, waiting the appearance of the consul, who had promised the mate to come off in a shore boat for the purpose of seeing him. By this time the men had forced his secret from the cooper, and the consequence was that they kept him continually coming and going from the afterhold. The mate must have known this, but he said nothing, notwithstanding all the dancing and singing, and occasional fighting which announced the flow of the Pisco. The peaceable influence which the doctor and myself had heretofore been exerting was now very nearly at an end. Confident, from the aspect of matters, that the ship, after all, would be obliged to go in, and learning, moreover, that the mate had said so, the sailors, for the present, seemed in no hurry about it, especially as the bucket of bungs gave such generous cheer. As for Bembo, we were told that, after putting him in double irons, the mate had locked him up in the captain's stateroom, taking the additional precaution of keeping the cabin scuttle secured. From this time forward we never saw the Maury again, a circumstance which will explain itself as the narrative proceeds. Noon came, and no consul, and as the afternoon advanced without any word even from the shore, the mate was justly incensed, more especially as he had taken great pains to keep perfectly sober against Wilson's arrival. 2 or 3 hours before sundown, a small schooner came out of the harbor, and headed over for the adjoining island of Imeo, or Moria, in plain sight, about 15 miles distant. The wind failing, the current swept her down under our bows, where we had a fair glimpse of the natives on her decks. There were a score of them, perhaps, lounging upon spread mats, and smoking their pipes. On floating so near, and hearing the maudlin cries of our crew, and beholding their antics, they must have taken us for a pirate. At any rate, they got out their sweeps, and pulled away as fast as they could. The sight of our 2 6-pounders, which, by way of a joke, were now run out of the side ports, giving a fresh impetus to their efforts. But they had not gone far, when a white man, with a red sash about his waist, made his appearance on deck, the natives immediately desisting. Hailing us loudly, he said he was coming aboard, and after some confusion on the schooner's decks, a small canoe was launched overboard, and, in a minute or two, he was with us. He turned out to be an old shipmate of Germans, one Viner, long supposed dead, but now resident on the island. The meeting of these men, under the circumstances, is one of a thousand occurrences appearing exaggerated in fiction, but, nevertheless, frequently realized in actual lives of adventure. Some 15 years previous, they had sailed together as officers of the Bark Jane, of London, a South Seaman. Somewhere near the New Hebrides, they struck one night upon an unknown reef, and, in a few hours, the Jane went to pieces. The boats, however, were saved, some provisions also, a quadrant, and a few other articles. But several of the men were lost before they got clear of the wreck. The 3 boats, commanded respectively by the captain, German, and the 3rd mate, then set sail for a small English settlement at the Bay of Islands in New Zealand. Of course they kept together as much as possible. After being at sea about a week, a Lascar in the captain's boat went crazy, and, it being dangerous to keep him, they tried to throw him overboard. In the confusion that ensued the boat capsized from the sails ibing, and a considerable sea running at the time, and the other boats being separated more than usual, only one man was picked up. The very next night it blew a heavy gale, and the remaining boats taking in all sail, made bundles of their oars, flung them overboard, and rowed to them with plenty of line. When morning broke, German and his men were alone upon the ocean, the 3rd mate's boat, in all probability, having gone down. After great hardships, the survivors caught sight of a brig, which took them on board, and eventually landed them at Sydney. Ever since then our mate had sailed from that port, never once hearing of his lost shipmates, whom, by this time, of course, he had long given up. Judge, then, his feelings when Viner, the lost third mate, the instant he touched the deck, rushed up and wrung him by the hand. During the gale his line had parted, so that the boat, drifting fast to leeward, was out of sight by morning. Reduced, after this, to great extremities, the boat touched, for fruit, at an island of which they knew nothing. The natives, at first, received them kindly, but one of the men getting into a quarrel on account of a woman, and the rest taking his part, they were all massacred but Viner, who, at the time, was in an adjoining village. After staying on the island more than 2 years, he finally escaped in the boat of an American whaler, which landed him at Valparaiso. From this period he had continued to follow the seas, as a man before the mast, until about 18 months previous, when he went ashore at Tahiti, where he now owned the schooner we saw, in which he traded among the neighboring islands. The breeze springing up again just after nightfall, Viner left us, promising his old shipmate to see him again, 3 days hence, in Papeete Harbor. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.